Thanks for watching, everyone. For our latest Artemis Live video interview, I'm delighted to welcome Chris Parry from Renaissance Re Capital Partners. So Chris is the global head of capital partners at Renaissance Re, and he leads the team across the multiple third-party capital and the ILF strategies that the company is offering at this time. And RenRe's got one of the most diverse insurance linked securities platform offerings in the marketplace. So thought it'd be good to learn more about how the offering is evolving and also get Chris's outlook for what looks like being an incredibly interesting year ahead. So welcome, Chris. It's really good to speak with you.
Hi, Steve. Yep, thank you. Good to be here.
So perhaps we can start with the current state of the market. It seems everybody is talking about the marketplace at this point in the year. How do you see the ILS market in the wake of what was a difficult 1-1 renewals for a lot of people? And how do you view the capital raising environment at this time?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is the fifth or sixth year in a row where we've had a big event or a series of events that has impacted the market close to 1-1, which is obviously our typical sort of capital raising period in the year. I think from our perspective, no different from others in the market, we did face some significant headwinds. It was tough. There were various themes that came out. And again, probably consistent with what others were seeing in the market. I think one of the biggest challenges for us was really having to deal with the denominator effect, you know, where debt and equity and other asset classes had sold off during the course of 22. And really many of our investors were sort of overweight ILS and reinsurance. So one of the big challenges was to convince them and their investment committees to continue to trade forward and even in some cases increase their allocation, which was very, very difficult. You know, the other underlying themes which have been stuck with us for a while have really been, you know, the challenges with climate change and modeling. But in addition to that, you know, some of the, I guess, the severity of Ian created some concerns on the trapped collateral side and the collateralized REIT product. So that in itself for us was a particularly difficult part of the market. And I think tied into that, you also had the fact that many investors have felt that, you know, over the last few years, they're not necessarily being paid for the volatility that they're experiencing. So that's particularly pertinent for our higher risk, higher return strategies, which not only have seen the volatility, but they've also seen pretty meaningful levels of trapped collateral. So that aspect has been tough. There have been some bright spots for us, though. I mean, we did raise a fairly meaningful amount of capital in DaVinci, which is our rated offering. Investors are still gravitating towards the most efficient access point and DaVinci being rated and some of the other benefits that the DaVinci has, including asset leverage and financial leverage, is something investors have really gravitated towards. So that was a bright spot for us. In addition to that, I guess certainly in Q4, we felt that the cap on market was in a tough spot. Many of the deals were being pulled, and so bringing capital into that segment was also challenging. But now we're starting to see maybe some green shoots coming through on that part of the market. But overall, very difficult. You know, we're very, very fortunate and privileged to be able to bring capital into the market. So yeah, it was a tough market, but we navigated it relatively well.
Great. So the denominator effect that you mentioned is really interesting because it seems a lot of people thought that might play out last year, but I understand it continues and there's investors out there who still have balancing to do. Do you think that's something that's just going to take a bit of time to run through the marketplace as investors can't always make those decisions that quickly?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge with certain reinsurance products is that there is an illiquidity aspect to it. So getting your capital out quick and being able to sort of rebalance, certainly from an ILS and reinsurance perspective, there is a time lag to that. So we may well see some further rebalancing from institutional investors within the market, potentially scaling back their reinsurance and ILS participation. So again, a net negative for the industry. So potentially a continuation of that retrenchment of institutional capital that we saw at 1-1.
But things looking much more positive now, and obviously the cat bond market is particularly busy at this point in time, which should be good for one of your offerings at least.
I would say temper that maybe slightly. We're definitely green shoots, but there are still challenges out there. I mean, I would certainly say the cat bond is an area we would expect to see inflows. And again, that's really down to a sort of transitional shift from investors moving from some of the collateralized REIT strategies to cat bonds. They're more comfortable with the bond format, the transparency, the liquidity associated with that product. And again, if you look at performance of cat bonds relative to other parts of the market, they have been more defensive. They have experienced the mark-to-market volatility. That has been the big downside. But other than that, yeah, cat bonds have performed relatively well over that period.
Yeah. So let's move on and talk more about the RenRe Capital Partners offering specifically now. Perhaps you could give us a bit of an overview of the evolution of the division, as it really is a particularly broad offering, and there's a lot of different access points, as you said.
Yes, so we're very fortunate here. We've had a 20-year plus track record of managing third-party capital. So, the business has evolved over that time. We were very property cat focused initially. Different forms of investment vehicle, whether it be private equity and the DaVinci type that I mentioned, or more of the traditional fund format, Medici and Upsilon, which is our cat bond and collateralized REIT strategies. But I think over time, what we've really tried to do is expand the product base and the offering. Investors, I think over the last 5 or 6 years, have been obviously very familiar with the property cat product, less familiar with casualty and specialty. And we continue to get reverse inquiries from investors saying, are there other ways for us to participate? Are there other segments of the market that would be interesting? And so actually earlier 2022, we launched Fontana, which is our first dedicated vehicle focused on casualty and specialty. So that's been in the works for several years. But we were fortunate that the stars aligned. I think I used that comment when we were interviewed previously, but the stars did align on that. And so we were really able to bring that vehicle to the fore. And for us, or for the platform as a whole, and for a franchise, that really completes the full offering. So we're sort of a one-stop shop now for ILS and reinsurance. So if an investor wants to get access to property cat, casualty, specialty, we can offer that product offering to them. So that has been particularly satisfying. I think in addition to that, certainly over the last few years, we've tried to diversify our investor base. We were historically more North American-centric, and over the years with the addition of PGGM and Vermeer, and other non-North American investors, we've really expanded our footprint. So really got a great traction in Asia, Australasia, and Europe. So that's been a big focus of the team, just expanding that footprint. And then I guess the team itself, we've grown. There's no doubt about it. We were a relatively slim team in the mid 2015, 16. We've expanded the team. We've created more structure. I'm very fortunate. I have a very strong senior leadership team. Laura Bonanno heads up our investor relations team. Sebastian Yaks, well known to many in the market, heads up our portfolio management. Dave Corsi heads up our structuring. That's looking at all of the new vehicles, new ways to transfer risk to our partners. And then finally, Keenan Press, who heads up due diligence. So a really strong unit there that has been instrumental in the success of the team.
No, it's great to hear the growth, and interesting that you mentioned sort of in diversification within the investor side as well, because that's not something many people really talk about in the market, but obviously just as important in its own way. And it brings to mind, are you noticing different sentiment in different regions of the world at the moment, or is the sentiment fairly balanced?
That's a great question. I have to say, I definitely think that there's a divergence in opinions depending on where you've been. I've just come back from Australia. They're very focused on more defensive strategies, more risk remote, very sensitive to fees. The US investors, in certain cases, in certain pockets, are looking for more high octane, bigger bang for your buck investments. So it really does, and that's a very stereotypical perspective there. But I do think that region and investor type has a massive influence on the type of investment that they look at. So we at RenRe very much focused on the institutional investor base. We don't really look at family offices and high net worth. That's not an area we focused in on, but really institutional, long-term, sticky capital, which allows us to be more flexible post-event. It allows us to operate more of an accordion-type capital structure. So returning capital when the opportunities are not necessarily there, and raising capital when the opportunities are there.
Oh, interesting that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you, with such a range of vehicles, obviously you have different types of structures, different types of risk in those structures. But how do you manage that across the cycle? And are you making decisions about which to grow and which might prove to be stable, and perhaps some might shrink depending on what market conditions are like?
Again, that's absolutely paramount in terms of how we think about it. They're very fluid in terms of how the vehicles work together. I think the best example, and Kevin alluded to this on the earnings call, was Upsilon, our collateralized REIT strategy. We decided to put that vehicle into hibernation. We restructured a lot of the underlying contracts that were in the Upsilon vehicle, and they've actually been transferred into RenRe and DaVinci. So again, the capital flexibility, we were able to raise capital for DaVinci. We were able to provide continuity to our clients, but also provide attractive investment opportunities for our investors. So that's, I guess, one example of where Upsilon has shrunk. That doesn't necessarily mean it's dead, and we have the ability to bring that vehicle back and support new opportunities in the future with that construct. So we're very flexible in terms of how we can utilize the platform. I guess another example of that has been, we've obviously seen a lot of demand at the top end of the reinsurance programs. We've raised capital for Vermeer, which is focused on the US cat risk remote end. And so we were able to sort of lean into the market and work with PGGM to bring more capital into that vehicle as well. So we've really maximized the levers that we have in order to match the right capital with the, oh, sorry, the right risk with the right capital.
And those levers obviously are really important, but on the other side, I guess the platform that you've developed there is also providing benefits back to RenRe as a business as well. And obviously you've got fee income as one thing, and it's an attractive source of earnings. We've seen that in your results lately. But I've always thought about how these sorts of pools of capital can also help to make the balance sheet more elastic in a way. Is that another key angle for RenRe?
Yes, it's a great observation. I mean, certainly when we look at the RenRe equity versus the total managed capital that we have, we provide a sort of multiplier on that. So effectively, when we go to a client, we can offer a bouquet or a package of different balance sheets. So whether it's top layer, sort of top layer opportunities, or middle of the stack, or even the cat bonds. So the combination of that mix and match of balance sheets is well received. Firstly, it means that we can support clients in a more meaningful way, but also from a counterparty risk perspective, they're diversifying their counterparty exposure across multiple balance sheets. And I would say that of the six vehicles that we manage, four of them are now rated. So it's very important having that rating and the ability to use that rating alongside the more traditional fund structures, which are funds, or which are cat bonds and collateralized REIT. So that combination is really powerful when it comes to discussing supporting and working with clients over time.
And that must be really important in the current market environment as well. And I expect very well received by the cedent side.
Absolutely, yes. I think so. The capital partners business, the third party, our partners is ingrained in the way that the underwriters think about putting out lines to support clients. So absolutely, it's very much business as usual when they look at, okay, I know what each of the balance sheets does, I know which risks I need to allocate to each, and so they are able to work in a very efficient manner in order to provide that offering to clients.
And then on the investor side, I mean, clearly there's a wealth of choice if they work with capital partners, but what else should they be looking to RenRe? I mean, why else should RenRe be the partner they try and choose?
Yeah, so I mean, there are real three differentiators that we try and pitch to our investors. One, which is really the one, the most important here, is access to risk and building portfolios. So we've strived to achieve the best performing portfolios in the market, and constructing the most efficient portfolios. And that really, it takes various forms, but non-concurrent terms, private deals, being able to construct portfolios that really truly do differentiate from others in the market. So I think that's very important. Secondly, you've got the governance and oversight of RenRe. So we are a publicly listed company. We're subject to SEC oversight, Sarbanes-Oxley. That strong governance oversight is really, really important. We have regular board meetings for the JVs, so our partners actually attend those board meetings, so get a real insight into the strong governance and rigor that we sort of overlay each of those vehicles. And then the final point is really the alignment. So RenRe has over $1 billion invested in all of those JVs that we've discussed. And I think from a sort of, there is no better alignment. We have our capital alongside our investors. We could lose more capital than the fees that we generate if there was a big event. So I think that really does strike home with many investors and really gives them the comfort that we are truly partners in the product and in the offering that we're putting together.
Yeah, no, it's a great point on having the skin in the game. It's still absolutely vital in this market. But let's shift gears a little and focus on sort of now and also what's coming in the future. And you mentioned this earlier about sort of investor preferences, but perhaps you could go into a bit more detail and talk about where you're seeing investors wanting to deploy capital at this time.
I think there's two areas that we're expecting there to be further or continued interest. One is on the rated balance sheet side. So DaVinci's our flagship vehicle. That's really where investors have gravitated towards. They really like the fact that that's a side-by-side of RenRe's property cat portfolio. They love the fact that they're getting operational leverage, the fact that they can deploy, we can deploy way more limit than the capital that we hold. They're not subject to trapped collateral. That, I have to say, is a key differentiator. The fact that we're not having to have those conversations about how much collateral is coming back and what's the impact to cash, the cash drag associated with it has been really, really a sort of refreshing conversation or not to have. And then, in addition to that, I guess where else we're seeing is on the cat bond side. So cat bonds are definitely slightly more defensive than the other products in the market. I think with some of the restructuring that we've seen coming through has been very welcome. Obviously, spreads have increased meaningfully. So that's obviously hit the radar of many of our investors. So I think that will absolutely be an area where we'll continue to see investors flood into, well, not flood necessarily, but come into that market in certainly from our perspective in a disciplined way. So we don't want to bring too much capital to bear. And I think capital stewardship is something that resonates across all of our balance sheets. It's something that's really important that we don't want to grow too quickly. We're certainly not an asset gatherer. We don't feel that, being the biggest ILS fund is the most important thing for us. The most important thing for us is firstly the combination of those balance sheets alongside the RenRe Holdings balance sheet, but also just generating good performance for our investors.
What about on the sort of more private and collateralized side of the market and perhaps structures like Upsilon? Are you seeing any additional interest, or do you expect to see that coming back in the next sort of months?
Yeah, it's an area that we'll look at. Obviously, you've got a few important, well, a very important mid-year renewal coming up. As with any renewal, we would work with our underwriters, ascertain if there's an opportunity. I think it's important to say that we don't just raise capital. We have to see the opportunity first. If we see the opportunity, if we see a dislocation, if we see the ability to support our clients in a way that makes sense, at that point, we then go out to our partners and articulate the opportunity. So it's very much risk first, then capital second. So I think that's an important delineation maybe with some of our peers. But I think, we'll certainly see how the mid-year plays out, and that may be an opportunity for us. But we're always looking for ways to partner with third-party capital to support the market.
Do you think you're going to have an ability to raise more capital for some of those strategies? I mean, clearly there's a bit of a gap still in supply and demand at the moment, and definitely on the traditional reinsurance side. So I expect you're hoping for some good opportunities for vehicles like DaVinci and Vermeer.
Yeah, look, we're in regular dialogue with our investors. They're aware of the current dynamics. They're aware of the opportunity set. They also respect the fact that, we've been very diligent in terms of how much capital we've deployed into the market. So It's a fine balance of, you know, I think there will be opportunities, but again, it's very much subject to, you know, our own personal view of what is a required level of return in order to make sense. Because again, it goes back to the fact that RenaissanceRe's capital is invested alongside our partners, so we need to ensure that there's an adequate return for our own capital as well.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that gives investors comfort as well as knowing that it's being looked at for multiple reasons rather than just scale, perhaps.
Yeah.
So finally, Chris, maybe you could explain what some of the priorities and focus areas are for your team at Capital Partners for the rest of 2023, and should we expect to see any new ventures or vehicles coming to light?
We're always looking, but at the moment, I think it's very much, you know, we've completed the sort of offering with Fontana. I'm really pleased with how that's going. Potentially, we'll see some opportunities to grow that vehicle in the future. You know, that is definitely the Fontana capital raise was very much about education, and I think a lot of investors, it was the first time they'd seen some of those lines of business. So we are very focused on expanding the knowledge base of investors with regard to casualty and specialty. So I think that could be a growth area in the future. You know, going back to my previous comment, I think we'll always look at what's happening in the property cat space if there are opportunities there. And again, we have the flexibility. It may not be an Upsilon, it may not be a Medici, it may be one of the other vehicles that we decide to utilize in order to take advantage of the opportunity. But yeah, look, we're really excited about the current environment. The big question is obviously sustainability. Hopefully, we do believe that there is enough tailwinds for this to be sustainable for a period of time. So we're excited about that. The other area I guess we'll continue to look at is just the expansion of you know, our investor footprint. We'll be continuing to look at attracting new investors from different parts of the world. I think that's really helpful for us in terms of the sustainability of our franchise and our platform going forward.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Really appreciate you speaking with me today. Very nice to see you again, and good luck with the air miles that you'll clearly be racking up and in these investor visits. I know it's a tough job sometimes.
Certainly is, but no, I appreciate the sentiment. Thanks, Steve.
Great to see you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.